Maine State Fire Marshal Joseph Thomas on keeping yourself and your family safe from fire. In Maine, 2016 was better than average as far as the number of people who died in a fire, but still, the number was 20. That's down from an average of 25. Maine State Fire Marshal Joseph Thomas would like to see that number at zero and fervently tries to spread the message that working smoke detectors, fire escape plans, and other common sense measures save lives. Thomas is especially focused on senior citizens who are choosing to stay in their homes and age in place. He's part of a new effort with Maine's Area Agencies on Aging and AARP to help seniors stay safe. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk with State Fire Marshal Joseph Thomas about fire prevention, fire investigations, new technology, and more. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It's going to be cold this weekend, and perhaps you are going to crank up the wood stove or maybe have a pot of soup simmering on the range. Are you thinking about fire safety? State Fire Marshal Joe Thomas is. He joins me in the studio today to talk about fire prevention and the work that he does. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about fire safety, about working smoke detectors, about a escape plan? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Joe Thomas, it is always a pleasure to have you here on Maine Calling. Thank you for coming back.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
I want to start the program by just talking about some of the fires that have been in the news recently because, you know, they're all heartbreaking. But it seems to me that a lot, you know, right after the fire, there's no apparent cause to them. And, you know, you hear someone has died in a fire, the investigation, you know, continues. How often do you actually are you actually able to figure out what causes a deadly house fire?
Well, it really depends on the circumstances. I mean, if we have something with evidentiary types of application that we can apply to an investigation process, we can, in most cases, determine the exact cause. However, when you have total destruction and the building has totally collapsed, it's pretty much impossible to be able to track this back because we have to use what the building tells us as far as the burn patterns are concerned, certain types of damage, certain types of indications of heat. And if we have a viable scene, we can do an investigation that will lead us to a cause. But in many of these cases, as you know by the news that accounts for them, these buildings are fully involved when the fire department gets there. Consequently, the ability to salvage anything that would give us an opportunity to indicate a cause and origin just is not left.
One of those fires that's just heartbreaking is the one that happened in November in which a mother and her two young children were killed in Old Town. What do we know about this fire at this point?
Well, it is still under investigation. Given the circumstances that we had there, we had individuals that were deceased in different rooms. We have an open scene with fire travel in a number of different directions. We've done a number of interviews with people, even out of state, that happened to be there that particular night. We've sent materials to the lab to be analyzed. The medical examiner's office has done toxicology tests. And so, I mean, these things take time. And, you know, we don't go at it that we have a certain time frame that we have to meet to determine that cause and origin. We take it as it comes. We take it as the information comes. We do it at our pace. We do it scientifically. And, you know, we just don't rush at it.
So that fire was in November and still under investigation. There have been, unfortunately, a few since. In January, there was a fire in China, and the man's body was found outside of his home. What do we know about that fire?
That one was actually determined to be an electrocution by the medical examiner's office, so that was not considered a fire fatality.
So even though the firefighters arrived to a house that's on fire, it appears that he possibly got out of the house and then was electrocuted.
Correct.
Okay. Wow, that's sad. And in Palmyra in February, there was an apartment fire. And then in York in February, a house fire. Is it too soon to know for either of those, or do we know that
both of those have actually been classified as undetermined due to the amount of damage.
Yeah, yeah. So when you hear people, you know, it's something that, like fatal car accidents, we kind of, I think, sometimes come a little hardened to when we hear it on the news that there's been a fire and someone's been killed. It's just something that happens every day. But you kind of reject that, don't you? You don't want people to think, well, fires and deadly fires are a part of.
I would like to see him take it as a reminder that it can happen to them. I can't imagine any one of our fire victims wake up in the morning and anticipate they're going to die in a fire that day or that night. And to me, that's the signal to other people to wake up that it does happen and it can happen. And so I would like to see people be conscious of fire safety in their normal day-to-day routine and life in their homes.
Tell us how we do that. We learned as children to have working smoke detectors and a fire escape plan. Is that still the advice?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the things that we learned as a child can carry through to adulthood, and it has to be a conscious state of mind. People have to think about it. You know, it's like, you know, we keep hopping at it from our perspective in the fire service, but people just don't realize how fast that can happen.
What do we think? How many seconds?
Oh, I can tell you right now that studies have recently come out through the National Institute of Standards and Testing, as well as Underwriters Laboratory, that with the new modern materials that we have in our homes between furnishings and construction materials and all of the things that make our home, in my time when I started in 1973 in the fire service, it took probably in the area of, upwards toward a couple from maybe 2 minutes up to as long as 18 minutes for flashover to occur.
What does flashover mean?
Flashover is when all of the combustible materials in a space have given off enough vapors that everything ignites. And that's what we refer to as flashover. And those flashover temperatures, now you're talking in the range of 1,500 to 2,000 degrees. So certainly there is no survivability to it. And what we're seeing by these tests that were recently done is that given the materials and the off-gassing that they present as a result of being heated, we're seeing flashover in the 3 to 4 minute range. Now, if you think about it, have your smoke detector go off and think that you need to be out of that building in 3 to 4 minutes before that flashover takes place. You need to be conscious of what you're doing and how you're doing it in order to get out of that building.
I ask you this every time you are on our program, but I'm going to ask it again because I think it's some information that everybody needs to know. How many of us have as many smoke detectors as we need to have and have working smoke detectors? If you were to walk through the homes of Maine right now, how many have done it well enough to really protect their families in a fire?
Our work that we did statistically in analyzing the situation before we went down the road of the endeavor that the American Red Cross has started with us, we basically determined that 60% of the homes in Maine did not have working smoke detectors.
This is no working smoke detectors.
No working smoke detectors.
And that was the case in the fire in Old Town. Even though we don't know a cause, we know that about the building, right?
Correct.
All right. I want to change tacks just a little bit because I know you have a new focus, a new effort underway with the Area Agencies on Aging and AARP to really help senior citizens. We hear a lot about aging in place. We know there's a lot of new technology, but I know that many people's loved ones or children are worried that maybe mom or dad's a little more forgetful than he or she used to, maybe leaving a pot on the stove or leaving a candle lit. Tell me about the effort that's underway and what you're hoping to do. I mean, you can't clearly get to every single home in Maine.
Well, it's really interesting. And let me set the stage for you. The picture that we see, we did a 10-year analysis of our fatality information. And what we found was that 62% of our fire fatalities in the state of Maine involved the elderly.
Wow.
And I found that troubling because I know that we are an aging state, and I know there are not enough inadequate assisted living facilities to take care of our aging population. And even I, in fact, went through a circumstance where my father lost a leg when in his elderly years to diabetes, and we had to get him into a assisted living facility. He was on a 3-year waiting list just to be able to get into to a place that could care for him. In the meantime, he was still living by himself. I did the son routine, called every night. Boy, if he didn't answer that phone, I'm in the car blasting to his house, and lo and behold, he had just fallen asleep. What's the big problem, you know? And he still realized his independence there, but, you know, it troubled me that it wasn't the right thing to do. But the reality of it is we have a lot of elderly folks who are going to do exactly that. They want to be there, number one. And number two, there are just no other options for them to live. So what we're seeing is because of the things that they still continue to do and may not be as apt at doing them, they can get themselves in trouble. I'll give you an example. Our most significant burn injuries are as a result of women setting their clothing on fire while cooking.
Mm.
And the other significant problem that we do see, surprisingly, is smoking on oxygen. And lastly is heating. And so what we see is that those three things are really making the majority of dangerous circumstances for our elderly to exist in those homes. Now, the fire service, by statute, we do not have access into single-family homes. We don't do inspections in single-family homes. We'll do a courtesy inspection if somebody calls and said they'd like to have some information or assistance. But routinely, we're not in single-family homes. When the fire service is in there, something has already happened.
Right.
So what we needed to do was find a way that we could get somebody who is in there to look for these issues by which they can help us make it safer for them. So I tried to get creative, and I simply thought about who's out there. Well, I linked up with Jane Margeson at AARP. I linked up with Jess Meyer with Agency on Aging. And with all of their collaborative groups, these folks are in those homes every day. Meals on Wheels is a perfect example.
Right.
So what we've done is we've created an initiative using a program by the National Fire Protection Association called Remembering When. The goal of that program is to teach those folks who have immediate contact with that elderly group to be able to look for the things that we would as fire service specialists, smoke detectors, adequate clearance of combustibles from wood stoves, paths of travel for exiting from the home, making sure that their front stairs are shoveled out just as well as the back stairs are. All of those things that we would do. And in fact, there's a set of checklists that they can take with them. And we're having very good luck getting that message out around the state.
Great. Can we put a link to Remembering When to the program on our Maine Calling Facebook page?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. We'll do that after the program. We'll make sure and get that up there for folks so they can get a hold of that checklist. You told me, Joe, really scary that you said the number one cause of injury for people in this age group is women catching their clothes on fire when cooking. Is something as simple as a fireproof apron something that can make a difference? I don't even know if such a thing exists.
I don't either, to be honest with you. But I think the things that we have to instill upon them, probably most importantly, is no loose clothing. Usually when we find that they've set themselves on fire around the stove, it's usually some type of a loose garment, like the sleeve on a house coat.
Right, a robe or something, yeah.
In close touch with the burner. And obviously sets that house coat on fire.
Sure, you can easily see how that would happen, especially in wintertime when people are wearing long sleeves.
Correct.
Mm. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking with State Fire Marshal Joe Thomas. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to a break, Joe, I'm going to talk to you, ask you about something I also know is one of your favorite topics, which is free smoke detectors.
Free smoke detectors.
Smoke detectors can be pricey, you know, one at a time, not so much. But if you're trying to put eight in your home, you may not have the budget for it. Where can someone get free smoke detectors?
There's two quick ways that they can do that. They can either call our office at the Fire Marshal's office in Augusta, and I can leave you the number for that to put up, and also through the American Red Cross. We've been working with the Red Cross now for a number of years with their initiative that they have nationwide to assist in the installation of smoke detectors where needed. In the state of Maine, last count that I had, we were up over 6,000 installations that have been done.
Great. And, you know, we have a Facebook post already from Amy with Bath Housing, and she writes, Bath Housing's Community Aging in Place program serves all of Sagadahoc County and can install smoke detectors, CO detectors, and do other home adaptability upgrades for qualifying seniors. Thank you, Amy, for posting that. And I invite any of you who know about a local, maybe a countywide or community program to help people out with smoke detectors or one of these efforts like Joe was talking about, Remembering When, to post on our Facebook page, and we'll use that as a resource for today's program. Is there a kind of smoke detector you favor?
No. Given the circumstances, I mean, the science of smoke detectors will allow for different types, whether it be photoelectric or ionization, to be more effective in one area or not. But when it comes down to the fact that people don't have any, I say anything is better than nothing.
Okay. Well, on that note, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
On the next Fresh Air, a medevac helicopter pilot who demonstrated how a woman can be brave and effective in combat. After receiving a Purple Heart and a Distinguished Flying Cross with Valor device, Major Mary Jennings Hagar became the plaintiff in an ACLU suit against the Defense Department, arguing that excluding women from combat was unconstitutional. She has a new memoir. Join us.
Tune into Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock. This weekend, starting on Friday evening, our annual high school basketball tournament championship weekend gets underway on Maine Public Television, with streaming also available at mainepublic.org. Please note, the most accurate and up-to-date schedules for both the games and for Maine Public Television programming are at mainepublic.org. Click on television. Adjustments have been made since Experience Magazine went to press. And for those of you who will miss the PBS NewsHour and Nightly Business Report this Friday evening, please note they can be seen on the World Channel at 10 and 11 p.m. respectively.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling, and I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Fire Prevention and Safety. In the studio with me, Joe Thomas. He is Maine's Fire Marshal. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Joe, I'll start with an email from Thorndike. He says, this questioner says, do you have recommendations for smoke alarms for people who cannot hear the high-pitched tone or the voice of a fairly standard alarm? What models have low, loud tones, and where are they available?
There actually are detectors available that can be available for hearing impaired. They can do everything from lights to actually vibrating the bed. So there are a host of them. In many cases, you will not find those in the standard, I would say, Lowe's or Home Depot or some type of a hardware store. What I would recommend is that you check with your local fire equipment companies that may be in your area, or websites of some of the manufacturers like First Alert or Kidder or any of those major manufacturers.
So First Alert and Kidder both carry these?
Yes.
Okay, great. And then we'll have a question from Erin from Augusta. She called, but she had a bad connection. What she wanted to ask is for a fire escape plan. How do you create one if you have young children? I need it to be something a four-year-old can remember and do.
Actually, the National Fire Protection Association website has a number of resources that will help families with children put an escape plan together. We've got some programs out there that local fire departments are doing along the same lines. Some of the programs are called Operation Edith, Exit Drills in the Home. There are a number of varieties out there for age-appropriate types of training for the children. So first and foremost, contact your local fire department. They may have something already available there that they can assist you with that. And if not, like I said, try the National Fire Protection Association. And when all else fails, call our office.
Okay. And I do have that phone number, which is 626-3870. That's the phone number for the State Fire Marshal's Office, not for Maine Calling. State Fire Marshal's Office, 626-3870. And we'll also post that on our Facebook page. We're going to go to Round Pond and Brittany. Hi, Brittany. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you. I work for an organization called CHIP. It's a small nonprofit in Lincoln County, and we do fuel assistance and home repair. I recently had a client that called asking for help replacing her furnace, and the furnace company had told her that it needed to be replaced immediately because of risk of burning a hole in the firebox. And this is not the first call like this that I've received, so I wonder if it's not an uncommon problem. Sounds like there's a risk of fire or carbon monoxide poisoning. We wouldn't be able to help with the replacement. It sounds like LIHEAP is a low-income assistance program, and they work very slowly and would not be able to help with this until the summertime, potentially. I'm just wondering if there's any kind of assistance for furnace replacement or even furnace cleaning. That's another thing that I've gotten comments on is that people need help with furnace cleaning, and I know that can lead to potential fires.
You know, I'm not I personally am not aware of anything that would be available out there. However, I do know one of the most popular locations for getting information like that is to actually call through the 211 line.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is they have just about any kind of information that is going on in the state where somebody can be directed to at least solve their problem or get information about how to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd give that a try first and foremost. And the other possibility is to contact the town hall for the local community. They may be aware of other opportunities as well.
Sure.
Good luck, Brittany, and thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We have a post from Kathleen on Facebook. I read recently that sleeping with bedroom doors closed is safer than having them open in the event of a fire. Is this true? Both my kids like to have their doors open at night, but I'm wondering if we should make it a habit to close them.
The safest practice for your bedroom door is to sleep with it closed. And the reason being is that while you're asleep, if a fire starts, the products of combustion are going to spread through that house very quickly. And if you're in sleep and get the reaction of waking up to the smoke detector, if you do have that door closed, it does give you a time to at least be able to assess the circumstances of what's going on in the home, i.e., is there smoke, is there heat? If the bedroom door is closed, you have the time to at least be able to get up, get to the door, take the back of your hand, put it on the door, see whether or not you feel heat or if it's still cool. If it's still cool, then you can open it slowly and work your way out of the home in a safe manner. If it's hot and you know the fire is right there on the other side of it, you're going to want another means of escape, whether that be out a window or another means.
Now, does it have to be closed tight? And
should be.
Yeah.
It should
yeah.
be, because the smoke is going to go through any opening as it spreads through the house.
Some of us have dogs who will scratch at a door that's closed tight and want to open it. Yeah. That's what I was asking, because open a crack even help, or is that do away with all the help?
Yeah, it certainly will give you a little bit more time, but the smoke's still going to get in there.
Thank you, Joe. Okay, we'll go to Gardner and Larry. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, Jennifer?
Great.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, great topic. I'm a little nervous, but I'll try to work my way through this. I've got a couple of products I wanted to mention. There's one by, it's called Smart Burner by Pioneer Technologies out of Ontario, Canada. And what these are is that they're devices that you can simply swap out. It's a plug-and-play swap-out device on a four-burner electric range. What you can do is these coils that they put on these four-burner ranges get extremely hot, especially when they're turned to high range. You're upwards of 1,100, 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. These smart burners, what they do is you can plug them in. You take out the old elements and you plug in these new ones, smart burner, and it regulates the temperature. It drops it down to 650 degrees Fahrenheit. And what that does is it drops it below the auto ignition point for most common combustibles.
Correct.
Such as cloth and vegetable oil.
Interesting. Larry, I'm so glad you called, because I've been reading about some of the new technologies that can help people. And I was wondering about the price range. To come in your home and have something like a smart burner installed on the stove or on one of your parents' stoves, how much does that cost?
They're very, very inexpensive. You're talking about $200 for a set of four coils. You'll get 3 6-inch coils and 1 8-inch coil.
Great. Well, I invite you to go onto our Facebook page and post more information about that. Also, I wanted to ask you, Larry, are you familiar with some? I stumbled across something called iGuard stove, which is something that the stove will turn off if it senses there's not movement in the room for 5 minutes. Are you familiar with some those kind of products and how much they cost?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that the next product was called, this one's called RangeMinder. It's a similar product to what you just mentioned. And what it does is it remembers when you forget. This device here, it's got replacement knobs. For you take off your old knobs and you put these knobs on, and it has a what they call the range minder base. And it's basically an audible alarm. It works off from time. It's a timer, basically. When you turn that knob on, these new knobs that you put onto your range top will predetermine a set time between the knob and your range minder base. So let's say you had the range turned on to a high position. They found that within 5 minutes of a product being in the pan or on a pot for that duration of time, after 5 minutes, it'll sound an alarm and get you back to the stovetop. They're very cool.
Great. Technology. Really, really interesting technology. And Joe, you've been following all of this as well.
Yeah, it's funny. We were just talking about that when I came in before we got started. The technology out there is really impressive. And I've seen some that will actually turn off the stove when it senses that something in a pan has gone dry. It can determine the temperature of the pan and what it should be compared to what it is, indicating that there's nothing in it and it's simply heating up the pan. There's a wide variety of these new techniques out there and technologies, and it's really encouraging for us.
Well, Larry, I invite you to put information about your company and the products that you help people with on our Facebook page. Thanks so much for calling in. And then let's see, I'll go to Gouldsboro and John. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Oh, hi. Thank you, Mr. Thomas, for doing so much to save lives in Maine.
Thank you.
My question is, Which is a better choice, gas or electric, when it comes to appliances and dwellings? I'll take the answer off here. Thanks.
Okay. And, John, before you hang up, are you talking about somebody's oven, stove, washer and dryer?
Oven, hot water, dryer, right. The standard household appliances. Better to make the decision to have gas appliances when you build the house, or should we just go with all electrics, which is a better choice?
You know, both abilities, electricity or gas, can be very safe and very efficient. I think it really, I mean, it's a personal choice. And in many respects, it depends on what resources you have available utility-wise in the local community as to perhaps what best serves you. The safety measures in the new appliances are sophisticated for both types of fuel sources. So it really does become a personal choice.
All right. Thanks, John, for your call. Barry on Facebook is talking about how her dog, who was rescued from the pound, alerts her to any alarm, egg timer, phone depleted battery. And, you know, family pets have been known to save their families from tragedy. You're smiling at lots of stories, Joe.
Well, no, but I mean, there is clear indication that in many cases our pets sense things happening in the environment before we do. And boy, I can tell you, you know, our little pet Peanut, our dog, he knows when the FedEx truck is coming before we do. And he's right on spot with that. So, I mean, there are clear indications that animals can sense things before we do, yes.
If you'd like to join the conversation, our email talk@mainpublic.org, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Jenny in Portland. Says she lives with her husband and two young children. I had our couch tested for toxic flame retardants when I was pregnant with our first child. I was horrified to learn that the couch I'd been sitting on for my entire pregnancy had toxic flame retardants in it, including Firemaster 550, which contains chemicals linked with learning disabilities in children. As a pregnant mom, I was scared for my baby. Even so, I figured these chemicals must be doing something important to protect my family from fires. But then I heard these chemicals don't even do what they're supposed to help prevent fires. Is that true?
I will say that fire retardants have been a topic of discussion going all the way back to the 1970s. Personally, I think we have already eliminated by law fire retardants in Maine, especially the bromides. That were common in fabrics early on. We, as a fire service, are not really pushing fire retardants in upholstered furniture anymore like it used to be, because there are other means to do it, and they can be just as effective or more effective. And so there's a continuous move to remove those. In fact, our firefighters in the state have just proposed legislation to continue the process of removal.
Right, because the chemicals released during a fire.
In their case, they're looking at it from a cancer presumption approach, because they're exposed to it, perhaps not so much during the fire event when they're wearing their air packs, but during overhaul when these things are still off-gassing.
If the fire retardants don't work as well as they had hoped when they created them and put them into furniture, but you're talking about how quickly flashover occurs, how quickly things like couches can ignite. What's the option? What's the safer alternative?
People aren't going to want to hear this from me, but the safest approach to fire safety in a home today is to have it sprinkled. Time-wise, the reaction of a sprinkler system in a matter of seconds to a fire in that home will it hold it in check or extinguish it completely with one head in that room. And the reaction time is far faster than anything else we have available.
Is it standard practice when someone builds a new home or renovates a home in Maine to sprinkle it?
It's becoming better. But it's certainly, you know, I mean, my point is that people have to make this a conscious decision about the safety of their home, whether they want it or they know. They decide whether or not they want wood floors, granite countertops, whether they want yellow paint, brown paint. I would like to encourage people to at least consciously think about what's the value of that sprinkler system in there to me and my family.
How much does it cost to sprinkle an existing home?
It varies. I mean, I have a 1,500 square foot single family ranch, and I sprinkled it when I built it for about $2,000.
We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Nora McInerney isn't interested in small talk.
I want the big talk.
So her podcast cuts right to the heart of human tragedy.
Everybody has these kinds of pain, and it's different brands for all of us, but that is a way of connecting.
Nora McInerney's podcast, Terrible, Thanks for Asking, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered with Nora Flaherty from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. And coming up in about 20 minutes in our 2 o'clock Public Affairs Hour, Speaking in Maine takes us next to the 2017 Camden Conference featuring Refugees and Global Migration, Humanity's Crisis. This afternoon's talks come from Kas Muda, and his talk, Has the Refugee Crisis Created a Perfect Storm for the Far Right? And also Maha Yahya discussing refugees and the remaking of an Arab order. Again, that's coming up in 20 minutes. In our 2 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on Speaking in Maine here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about fire safety. In the studio with me, our state fire marshal, Joe Thomas. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Earlier in the program, Joe, you were talking about the causes of fire and fatal fire for especially senior citizens. We talked further about people who had their clothes catch on fire when they're cooking because they had maybe a long loose sleeve or something like that. But the second cause, if I remember right, is people smoking when they're on oxygen.
That's correct.
So, what you know, if someone is still smoking when they're on oxygen, they're quite addicted. To tell them to just quit smoking is probably not a practical solution, is it?
It's certainly not what we find that they're not going to quit. I mean, that's why the circumstances are what they are. And knowing that's probably the case, what we've done with our office is we have actually published a trifold flyer that indicates to those people, if you're going to be oxygenated and you are a smoker, these are the safety tips that we would like you to follow. And I'll give you an example. One of the things that we make sure that they are reminded of is to, number one, before they do light up, they shut off the supply of oxygen. They give themselves at least 10 minutes to allow their clothing to lose some of the enriched oxygen that is actually gathered into the fabric of their clothing, and then they go outdoors and smoke. So those are some of the safety tips that we try to do. I don't think it's my business to try and tell somebody or get somebody to stop smoking. But when it comes to that danger, I think I have an obligation to say to them, if you're going to do it, this is how to do it as safe as possible.
And to get that brochure, call 626-3870.
Call us and we'll get them out. Sure.
Okay, great. We'll go to Frank calling from Solon. Hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I did some research into smoke detectors, and I got a little confused because I saw that there's a kind of a detector that is sensitive to smoke, and then there's another kind that is sensitive to an actual
to the flame itself.
Right.
Correct.
And I'm wondering which one's better. And is there a detector that's a combination of both?
There are combinations out there. The way we generally leave it is that the types of detectors that would be most reactive to smoke are the ones you at least don't want around your kitchen area, because that's where the nuisance alarms are going to come from. And usually it's the nuisance alarms that cause people to be irritated with them and remove batteries and other types of reactions to that. The placement is really dependent on what your protected area is intended to be, whether that be a sleeping area, a living area, a mechanical area. And if you really want some specific guidance for your particular circumstances, call our office and ask for the fire prevention division, and we will give you all the guidance that we can.
Wonderful. And did I understand you to say earlier that fire prevention devices are available free from your office?
Smoke detectors are available free with our effort with the American Red Cross.
Okay. I thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Frank. From Jean on Facebook, the new technology you were discussing regarding safety on electric stoves, is there anything similar for gas stoves?
I am not aware that there are. Now, that there may be, but the most prominent one that we've been seeing is for electric appliances.
Right, right. But you could still get the sensor that tells you when somebody's not moving in the kitchen.
I would certainly think so.
All right. So we'll move to Sean in Booth Bay Harbor. Hi, Sean. Go ahead.
Hi there. Joe, you are a wonderful spokesman for the cause. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've been involved with this committee that you're working on with Jane and Jess.
Sean, hi.
And so hearing you talk about this is near and dear to my heart. One of the technicians that I've been working with on some of this project for helping elderly stay in their homes has developed a mechanism where he can tell when his dad turns on the kitchen stove. And he gets a text message on his phone, and then he can also get a text message when his dad turns the stove off. So he's able to be aware of the amount of time that the stove is on, and if he's concerned, he can call and say, "What you cooking, Dad?" And sort of gives him the comfort and assurance that he knows what's going on. Plus, he put the same thing on his stove at home, so when he has a pretty good idea when supper's getting ready, so he can make his way back to home and have supper with his wife. So,
Sean, you know what I'm going to ask you? I'm going to ask you to go to the Maine Calling Facebook page and post some information about how other people who might want this service can get it.
Okay, I'd be happy to do that. And, Joe, I look forward to connecting with you on some triad opportunities in the near future.
Thank you, Sean. Good hearing from you.
Okay. Take care.
You know, it's interesting, Jen, that he mentions that, because I actually, I live in a rural area here up in the Guster area. And, you know, I always wondered, especially in my case where I do have the home sprinkled and I do have my smoke detectors. And the problem that I've got is folks around me work all day. So, I mean, you know, I could have a problem in that home, and I'm not going to know about it until I get home after work, unless it somebody else sees something going on. I found a technology that I can plug into the wall that will actually react to my smoke detectors going off and give me an indication on my smartphone. Now, realize at my age, my smartphone is smarter than I am for sure. But I thought, you know, the technologies out there are just absolutely amazing. And the things that we can do to incorporate them into the safety of our lives, I think, is just absolutely phenomenal.
It seems hard to keep track of, and people may not know where to turn, but you would suggest people contact their local agencies on aging or fire department. Are both of those trying to keep up as best they can with the technology that's available to people?
We all do, to be honest with you. Yeah. And I can tell you, at our public safety meetings with the various groups, especially with our agencies on aging, some of the discussions that take place, I mean, there is some amazing stuff out there. I bet you could spend an amazing amount of time just reading white papers and Googling thoughts and find answers out there about a variety of measures.
We're going to go to Buxton and Jeff. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Yeah, Joe, thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you very much.
And my question is there any discussion at, you know, at the state level to establish some incentives towards people installing sprinkler systems in their single-family homes? Like I get credit for when I upgrade my efficiency of my heating system, for instance. And alternatively, am I penalized in a tax situation in my town because I would have an improvement such that now it would generate more tax revenue for the town, which would be a negative incentive to go ahead with this technology? I'll take my answer off the phone, sir. Thank you.
There is actually a movement at the federal level, and the bill is sponsored by Susan Collins from Maine, and it is called the Tax Incentive Act, and it's intended to provide a taxing incentive for people that do use sprinklers in their homes. And so that effort is going on right now at the federal level. I can tell you that your local, your insurance company will certainly provide an incentive. I get a reduced rate on my homeowner's insurance because of our sprinkler system that we have in our home. So there are initiatives out there. And I think that as communities begin to realize the cost savings that they can get as a result of trying to keep up with fire suppression activities, that the protective measures that an individual can take does have a benefit to the community, and they may see a light to incentivize it as well.
Do you believe that 10, 20 years from now, it's going to be much more standard practice to either build homes with sprinklers or to retrofit them?
You know, after spending my adult entire adult life trying to get us to that point, I sure hope it does.
We're going to go to Westbrook and Eric. Woodstock and Eric. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
My big question is about chimneys. I hear that they should get swept on a regular basis. I've heard it depends on what kind of wood you use. And I've heard of people that have had chimney fires. And I have an insert in my fireplace. Would you recommend throwing a piece of wood in, closing the door, and going to bed? Or would you wait for that to go out?
Good questions.
Well, I mean, it depends on the unit that you're using and what the manufacturer tells you to do with it. I mean, when you was mentioning the things that you hear about, the real answer is all of the above. I mean, all of those things do happen. When it comes to wood stoves with chimneys, first and foremost, we prefer to see that they are a lined chimney, and the open brick and mortar is not exposed to the heat and the ability to create creosote. We know that green wood creates creosote faster than drier wood does. So, I mean, all of those things that you're seeing as a possible problem to using an alternative heat source or wood can be the case. I can tell you that my recommendation to people who burn wood is to make sure that they do routinely clean it. And that isn't just with some product being thrown in to help. It's to really get that brush up and down the chimney. And I really believe in once a year having a certified chimney sweep check that chimney for condition to make sure it's even safe to burn wood in the first place.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot for your call. I'm going to go to an email from Ralph. Are lithium batteries safe to use in smoke detectors?
They are. Yes, they are. The issue with lithium batteries and the problems that we've seen are predominantly more specific to items like laptops, where they have been recalled in a number of situations. What I encourage people to do with the type of appliance that they want to use, and if lithium batteries are involved, is to check out the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website and see whether or not there are any recalls or if they have any safety bulletins posted on them as far as that product and that combination of battery are concerned.
Okay. We'll go to Portland and Morgan. Hi, Morgan. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling with State Fire Marshal Joseph Thomas.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Chief, I have a question for you. I live in a high-rise in the city of Portland, and one of the residents on the first floor leaves her unit door open about 14 hours a day. It's a self-closing fire door. Are you supposed to keep those closed at all times, your unit doors?
The intent of that door to be closed is for separation, compartmentalization. Now, that being said, there are circumstances where a door can be opened if it's tied to the alarm system with a magnetic release. Now, that could be the case, may not be the case. I don't know with the particular facility. What I would encourage you to do is to call the Portland Fire Department, Fire Prevention Bureau, and check with them to see whether or not that is a certified building for access that is tied to the alarm system.
So the door itself would have to be tied to the alarm system?
No, what actually happens is there's a magnet that will allow when the door will be held open by a magnet, and when the fire alarm actually activates, it loses its magnet, and the door is closing.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think that's the case, but I'll check.
Check with them, yes.
Morgan.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for your call. Joe, it seems to me many people, and myself included, aren't really aware of just what resources are available out there, places that they can turn. And even in a small rural community, will your fire department be able to help you if you have questions?
Well, it's a place to start. My suggestion is to always get a hold of the local fire department first. And I say to local fire chief, if you don't know the answer or can't find the answer, call us and we'll help you find it.
Well, we're going to put your phone number on our Facebook page. If you're not a Facebook type person and you want to jot it down right now, the State Fire Marshal's Office phone number 207-626-3870. We'll also post other resources that we mentioned on today's program on our website. Any parting words of wisdom?
Well, I just thought of another thing is that we also have a Facebook page. So if people want to check, and routinely we even post recall information by Consumer Product Safety Commission, please check out our Facebook page as well.
All right. Well, Joe Thomas, our state fire marshal, thank you so much for joining us today. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join me for a conversation about Cuba, how its culture and politics are changing, and what U.S.-Cuban relations may look like under the Trump administration. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.